This is Jason Hollerin. I proudly served for 33 years, culminating as the Deputy Commandant at West Point. Put this on your calendar. World War II weekend inside Old Bethpage Village Restoration on Long Island. Scores of operational vintage armor, in formation, May 18th and 19th. Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman invites you to join him in saluting America's greatest generation and all those who have worn the uniform in defense of our freedoms. That's May 18th and 19th, presented by the Museum of American Armor.
Now, back to the Larry Kudlow Show.
All right, we're talking stocks with David Bonson of the Bonson Group, author of the DividendCafe.com, and Jim Urio of TJM Institutional Services. Jim Urio, just as a quick point, you are in the restaurant business. With respect to this potential blowout GDP number of 5% coming up this week, are you seeing that kind of demand, consumer spending, in your restaurants?
No, we're not. Actually, it's gone. Our restaurants have gone down a little bit. Some of that's seasonal too, in October, but a little bit worse than last year. And our restaurant too is at a price point that I think would be very advantageous in this sort of market, affordable luxury. We're like an upscale pub, and we have seen a little bit of a downtick. Nothing to be very worrisome, but it's not like going gangbusters that it was 6 months ago.
All right, I get it. Give us some stock market wisdom. We've kicked around interest rates and the Fed, and I don't think anybody is satisfied with the story, but what happens to the stock market?
That's part of the issue with the stock market, is nobody's satisfied with the story. When there's volatility like this in the bond market, that's the first thing that happens, is you get kind of scared, and then risk assets suffers, like we see in the stocks. And then the second part of that is that the higher rates go up, the less attractive stocks look. One of my favorites is that Greenspan model about earnings yield versus, investable yield in the treasury growth, and that's starting to look less and less good for stocks. So I'm not particularly high on stocks. I also don't think it's the big one. The market position usually, in lack of respect for risk, usually fuels the big, big moves that we've seen in the past. And I don't think that. I think that's definitely about 4,000. And the things I like that I've liked for 6 months, I still like gold, oil-related stocks, and Bitcoin. And again, I barely even know what Bitcoin is, but I've been watching the price pretty closely, and it seems to hold up in the sort of conditions I think are going to happen.
Gold did very well last week.
Very well, yeah.
It's heading back towards 2,000. I'm just looking. You're right about Bitcoin. It's holding just less than 30,000. Year-to-date, it's up 79%. David Bonson.
And I'm not one of those lunatic Bitcoin people, by the way, either. I just think if all this broad participation by these blue-blood institutional companies that have happened over the year has given some validity to it, then I think that could fuel a good move.
All right. Dave Bonson, what's your stock market take?
Well, we're still very heavily weighted in energy. It's our number one sector. It has been for 3 years. We think midstream in particular is very undervalued. There's a very contrarian idea here that a guy like President Biden is really good for the big cap names in upstream and midstream energy, because he doesn't let any new production happen, and it increases the value of incumbent assets. When there's no new pipelines, the people who already have pipelines are more important. And the same thing upstream. The only companies that can afford to buy anybody else right now or do anything are Chevron and Exxon. And Exxon's going to own about a third of the Permian Basin here pretty quick. So we love the energy story. And then you're getting to a point, Larry, where consumer staples are pretty oversold. They've had a tough go here. I think that their margins are going to hold. They have a lot of pricing power. And then when volumes do come back next year, they're going to be in record profits. So we have certain key consumer staple names we like. But Jim's right. Stocks are expensive. The market, as an index, you have seven companies. They're trading 50 times earnings, and they're the entire return of the market. 493 companies, rather, are flat on the year. So that it's not a good market when it's that top heavy. As far as my friend Jim Urio and Bitcoin, I can only say that nothing in the history of the world has ever ended well when nobody who owns something knows why the hell they own it.
David Bonson's too smart. I won't be on with him anymore.
You know, who said Bonson doesn't have a sense of humor? That's very, very good. the aforementioned David Bonson. They were terrific stuff. And my great pal, Jim Urio. Thanks, gentlemen. Folks, stick around. We got Money in Politics coming up with Steve Moore and Liz Peek. The world was a safer place under Donald Trump. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
From Wall Street to the White House, this is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. We're going to do some Money in Politics with Liz Peek, Fox News contributor, syndicated columnist, and Steve Moore of FreedomWorks and Committee to Unleash Prosperity Hotline, and the WABC radio host of More Money. Welcome back, kids. I am reading The Hill. Liz Peek, the world was safer under Donald Trump. There you have it. I looked again. There it was. The world was safer under Donald Trump. And the byline was Liz Peek. Liz, good work.
Well, I mean, the evidence is pretty clear, right? It's pretty hard to argue otherwise when during Trump's presidency we had basically no wars. We were not embroiled in any major conflicts. And I think the anecdote that I talk about in that piece really sticks with me, Larry. And it goes to carrots and sticks. People have talked about Biden being all carrots, no sticks. And I think we would all agree with that. When Trump first met President Xi of China, our biggest adversary, over dinner at Mar-a-Lago with wives and a very elegant dinner, Trump recounts how over a wonderful piece of chocolate cake, he left the table, came back, and announced that we had basically bombed Syria in retaliation for Assad's poison gas attack on men, women, and children, which offended Trump to the point where he said to his military, what can we do? And this is what they suggested, bomb the airstrip from which those poison gas attacks had taken place. For a Chinese leader to have this disruptive, unexpected, undiplomatic coup over dinner was an incredible shock. And I thought it really sort of set the tone for Trump's presidency and certainly our encounters with China. I think from that moment on, the world knew that Trump would take decisive action when pushed to do it. And let's face it, he used the clout, military and financial, of the United States in many important ways, whether it was renegotiating trade agreements or setting red lines in terms of what terrorists could do, et cetera. I thought it was very impressive, and I don't think you can deny it. You can hate other things about Donald Trump, but the truth is, the world was in a better place when he was president.
Well, listen, he bombed ISIS to smithereens. He took out al-Baghdadi. He took out Soleimani, the big shot from Iran. He actually enforced the Iranian sanctions, so they stopped, you know, hardly produced any more oil. Their foreign exchange reserves were at rock bottom. The country was basically bankrupt, and then he countered that with the Abraham Accords. So I think you're quite right, not to speak of the chocolate cake, which I don't know to this day if she could finish his chocolate cake.
I just think that was such a wonderful detail, right? Over a delightful piece of chocolate cake.
It's his favorite thing at Mar-a-Lago. It's Trump's favorite dessert at Mar-a-Lago, actually. And it is very, very good. But Steve Moore, I mean, you know, the world has blown up under Joe Biden. I had Walter Russell Mead on, distinguished historian, foreign policy professor at the top of the show, writing about this, how during the Biden years, we've lost our deterrent, basically, and all the bad guys around the world are now taking advantage of the fact that we've lost our deterrent. And even now, you know, with this Israeli war and the whole blow-up in the Middle East, they let the ballistic missile sanctions on Iran expire, all right? They expired as of Wednesday, and nothing has been put in to replace them, at least on a multilateral basis. I mean, it's really quite extraordinary how much things have deteriorated in a little less than 3 years under Joe Biden.
There's no doubt about it. And it goes back to, I guess, TR, who said, carry a big stick. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Reagan, who said that weakness is provocative. And right now we're weak. I mean, I hate to say that about our great country, but let's face it, we're weak right now. Why are we – a great report just came out by my friends at OpenTheBooks.com, Larry. I don't know if you've seen it. Biden has given $1 billion to Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
$1 billion. Why?
Right.
Why?
Right.
I mean, this is just so outrageous. By the way, you can buy a lot of rockets with $1 billion.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you and I talked about this on your show the other night. I said that I thought the amount of oil exports by Iran have risen by $50 billion. You said $80 billion. I don't know which one of us is right, but either way, that's a whole hell of a lot of money. And I don't know if it was intentional or not, Larry, but, you know, Trump basically bankrupted the Iranians with mm-hmm. his drilling policies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've said it so many times on your show that this is not just bad. You know, when you declare war on American energy, you're not just declaring war on the American economy. You're declaring war. You're making the world a much less safe place. And I'll say it again. I do not believe that we would see tanks in Ukraine right now if Trump had still been president. I really mm-hmm. don't. I don't mm-hmm. think that Russia would have had the money. So it's a really bad situation. I think that Liz has summarized it well. What did we have under Trump? Whether you like the guy or not, you had peace and you had prosperity.
Yeah,
well, that's what we need. We need peace and prosperity.
Well, that's one reason why, you know, this Harvard, Mark Penn's Harvard Caps Harris Poll survey just came out. Mm-hmm. It's registered voters, 2,100 registered voters. Trump 39. Biden 33, Kennedy 19, 9% undecided. When you ask the undecideds who they'll break for, 42 Trump, 36 Biden. And if you take Kennedy out of the race, Trump 46, Biden 41. I mean, the polls show it. And I think this story, if anything, Biden's deterioration on foreign policy, Liz, is going to get worse. No matter how much he supports Israel, which is a good thing, and I commend him for supporting Israel so far, he's done a good job. The fact is, Iran has been let loose, and they appeased Iran, and they did not enforce the sanctions in Iran, Janet Yellen notwithstanding. And yeah. By the by, let me just toss in a really stupid thing this past week. You probably saw it. The Bidens are weakening the sanctions on Venezuela. Oil and gas, which yeah. is absolutely pathetic. Absolutely
yeah, and,
pathetic.
And can I just say something about that Venezuela thing? I just tweeted this, actually, because it just makes my blood boil. The Wall Street Journal, where I think the reporting kind of gets more and more left-leaning,
yeah.
reports that the Biden White House has lifted sanctions on Venezuela in order to stabilize that country's economy, which admittedly is in free fall, and over time to dissuade migrants from coming to the U.S. Not a word about putting a lid on oil prices so that Joe right. Biden can get reelected.
Right.
I mean, give me a break. And in
Liz,
fact,
Liz, you don't understand. They're going to have fair and open elections right now. Maduro
yeah,
has promised
yeah.
that.
I mean, honestly. And by the way, the elections don't have to happen until second half of next right. year when, by right. the way, we are, you know, probably done with our election. I mean,
yeah.
Do they think we're that stupid?
Yeah, well, the answer is probably yes. By the way, Venezuela is a communist country. Venezuela is run by the Cuban military and the Cuban secret police. I know a fair amount about that, having worked on it when I was in the government. I mean, it just adds icing to the chocolate cake, except in reverse. I mean,
yeah.
they just to allow that to happen is quite remarkable. And still, they have not said a word about not only Iran's oil production, but their sales to China. You know, Trump cut off Trump's nose. Ships were interdicted, okay, if they were heading for China. That's the way he enforced those sanctions. And they have not mentioned that. And the President Biden didn't mention it in his speech on Wednesday night.
Well, I mean, because they don't want to go there. You know, why? So the question is, really, why don't they want to go there? Is it really fear that this military offensive that is being conducted via Iranian proxies will spread? There's a pretty big piece in the Telegraph today about a very well-coordinated, organized assault, effectively multi-pronged assault, being carried out by Iranian proxies northwest, north and south of Israel and also west. I mean, this is happening. It is visible. I mean, we're seeing all these rocket attacks from the north of the country, and also attacks from Yemen now.
This is really
a bad thing. And it's not like all these terrorists just woke up one day and said, oh, gosh, let's go send some rockets towards Israel. This is being coordinated, funded, and organized by Iran. And so the fact that we don't want to call them out. In his speech the other night, Biden says we will continue to hold them accountable. No, we don't. No, we won't. We're not doing anything to hold them accountable.
Steve, you read Walter Russell Mead in the Journal? I had him on the show. He's writing fabulous things about appeasing Iran. Iran is unappeasable. And that's the inconvenient fact. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I was going to use that very term. We are back to Neville Chamberlain appeasement. And for those who know their history, you know, that was one of the things that really launched World War II, was the appeasement in Europe. And where is it? When has it ever worked? It didn't work for Jimmy Carter. It didn't work, it's never worked. And what Reagan knew, and I think Trump picked this up from Reagan, is that, all the foreign countries love Biden. You know, he'd go overseas to these United Nations meetings or the OECD or the Gang of Eight, and he'd pass out money, right?
Yeah.
We love Joe Biden. He's the greatest president. They didn't like Trump too much because, you know, the old adage is we want a president who is respected and feared, not loved. And we don't have that right now. As Trump used to say, the rest of the world is laughing behind our back. Remember he used to say that, Larry? And he was right. And they're laughing at us.
Right.
Russia's laughing at us. Iran's laughing at us. All these countries they're not afraid of us.
Yeah, and China too. I mean, that's going to be a big problem. China's going to be a problem.
No, the same thing, by the way, Larry, with the whole thing about green energy. It's like, everything that China is doing is fossil fuels, building coal plants. And then Biden, they say to Biden, oh, yeah, we're all in on the green energy. No, they're not. Why don't you watch what they do, not what they say?
There you go. That's exactly right, by the by. All right, quick break. Liz Peek, Fox News contributor. Steve Moore, Committee to Unleash Prosperity. By the way, Steve Moore, quickly, how was the North Dakota governor? How was he?
Oh, he was fabulous. In fact, if people listen to the show after yours, I have a great interview, a 10-minute interview with the great governor, Doug Burgum of North Dakota.
Why doesn't he endorse Trump? He could be the energy secretary.
He should be the energy or commerce secretary. Really, really great. And, you know, what do Trump and Burgum have in common? They're businessmen.
Yes,
they understand the market.
Yes. Yeah. Very good. All right. Quick break. Liz Peek and Steve Moore. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
Hi, it's Ernie Anastas. You know, your thoughts can affect how you feel, and how you feel can impact your thoughts. Addressing your mind and body connection is the key to improving your overall wellness. Bergen Newbridge Medical Center is the largest hospital in New Jersey, providing comprehensive, equitable, compassionate, and high-quality emergency inpatient and outpatient medical care, plus mental health services and substance use disorder treatment. The Bergen Newbridge team can address your total health needs in one convenient location. Call 201-225-7130. For an appointment or newbridgehealth.org.
This is the Larry Kudlow Show. From Wall Street to the White House, this is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. We're talking money. Of more money following this show on many of these same stations. Steve Moore, we need a House speaker.
I'm so infuriated by the events of the last 2 weeks. And, everything has gone wrong. And here's where I am in my thinking. Let's bring back Kevin McCarthy. Mm-hmm. He was a good speaker. Mm-hmm. You know, look, nothing else has worked. I think Steve Scalise would have been a good speaker. I think Jordan would have been a speaker. Let's just go back to McCarthy. Here's the here's a point that I think a lot of people are missing. McCarthy was a good strong speaker. I didn't always agree with him, Larry, but I thought he did a very good job. But here's the other thing people are forgetting about this. Kevin McCarthy raised $100 million for the party. Who else can do that, Larry? You can't win these races. They have a 4-seat majority. We're going to lose 20 seats if we don't bring back someone like him. So let's have a campaign to bring back Kevin McCarthy, and you can talk to your friend from Florida and maybe get him straightened out on this. But
we need
a strong speaker. Newt Gingrich was a strong speaker. I thought, Boehner was a pretty good speaker. I thought Paul Ryan did a pretty good job as speaker, too. But you got to have somebody who's in charge, and to have a mamby-pamby in there, that's not going to work.
You know, Liz, I mean, they keep coming up with more candidates. There's a new list of candidates. I don't see any of them. I mean, they're going to have to compromise. I agree with Steve. I was perfectly happy with Kevin McCarthy. But they've got very important work to do. And one of the key things there, this supplemental security funding bill that Biden announced, you know, he's throwing everything in there.
Yeah.
He's equating Ukraine with Israel, which I think is a big mistake. Each of these things should be looked at separately, including he wants about $1 billion for the border, but it has nothing to do with closing the border. It has to do with expediting people coming into the border. All of this stuff has to be worked on, but you can't do it because the House can't meet because they don't have a speaker.
Yeah, it's just insufferable. I mean, they have got to figure this out. I almost wonder, I agree with you. I thought Kevin McCarthy was doing a pretty good job of herding the cats. And honestly, what he came up against was a personal grievance by Matt Gaetz. I mean, that's kind of what it boils down to. And unfortunately, Gaetz had a group of six that went along with him. I don't know if any of those minds can be changed. I was shocked by Nancy Mace being part of that group. I think a couple of the others also could be talked around. Probably it would take Donald Trump himself to actually get those guys in the room and say, hey, we got to get this, you know, we got to get over this, because the American people are looking at this and saying, why did I vote Republican? And boy, Larry, if we don't get a Republican in the White House next year and we don't take back the Senate and improve the margin in the House, I cannot imagine four more years of the leadership, lack of leadership we've seen, and the horrific spending. Somebody actually has to stand up and be a grown-up right now. I would love to see Donald Trump use his enormous influence and help get Kevin McCarthy back in that chair.
It's a tough call, Steve Moore. You know, there has to be a compromise here. Of the names out there, I don't see the compromise candidate. I just don't see it. And I don't even understand now, Steve, what is it that they're bickering over? Besides, you know, and it's not like it's a left versus right issue.
No, it's personalities.
Yeah, it seems to be, which is the worst kind of politics.
Yeah.
I mean, the people they're talking about right now, like Patrick McHenry and Emmer, I mean, they're fine, but I think you need what we were just talking about. You know, you need strength. You need, you need somebody who can, whip these guys into order. I just wish that we could get back to where we were. McCarthy, you know, I keep coming back to him because I thought he, and I think you agree with me, Larry, I thought he negotiated a good deal with Biden on the debt ceiling, you know? And what are these guys so angry about? And what do they think that they're gonna get that's better than Kevin McCarthy? And by the way, he carried a lot of these people, even Liz, the six or seven voted against him. He helped carry those people over the goal line and get him elected.
You know, what's really offensive is that they blame him for not getting the appropriations bills done on time. My understanding is the reason he didn't is because they kept injecting into those bills things that never possibly could have gotten through the Senate and even couldn't get through the Republican vote. So it came down to Matt Gaetz being peeved at McCarthy for personal reasons, I believe, and they did this. One idea I had, because maybe – as you point out, I don't think any of the people who've come forward, even Byron McDonald's and so forth, really are going to be able to get any kind of coalition together, is going outside. Lee Zeldin has been mentioned. It would be very interesting right now to have a Jew become become the Speaker of the House. I think that would be a very clarifying moment for Republican leadership and a great contrast to what's going on in the Democratic Party. We got to remember, at some point, we are fighting the Democrats. We should not be fighting ourselves. And that's kind of the big problem right now.
Speaking of Zeldin, the Democrats are the anti-Semitic party.
That's exactly right. Exactly.
I mean, you know, that's really something. The far left is, they're dragging the Democrats into this incredible anti-Semitism on Israel.
Yep.
Just as bad as these college campuses. Steve Moore, this $106 billion supplemental, you know, Biden's trying to do this all in one bucket, and it should be broken out and looked at separately, shouldn't it?
Of course. And you know, more and more, the Ukraine issue is very, very controversial within our movement. I'm against it. I don't know where you guys stand on it, but I think how much that money actually even gets to Ukraine. And I also feel pretty strongly that, you know, what we do here, we got to pay for some of this stuff. We got to cut other government spending. I mean, well, let's get rid of the $380 billion green energy slush fund and use that money to defend Israel and the Ukraine.
Amen.
Yeah, sure. Dream on.
Think Biden will go for that?
I mean, it's an omnibus bill, this supplemental. It's another omnibus bill. And that is just completely wrong.
And by the way, $100 million of that is for, quote, humanitarian aid.
Yes.
Where is that going to go? It's going to go to this.
Hamas. Hamas. Yeah. No. Yeah. It's a Hamas spending bill. Yeah, it's terrific stuff. And holding up the Israeli invasion. Holding up the Israeli invasion. Not good. All right, kids. We're going to have to leave it there. Liz Peek, thank you ever so much. Steve Moore, by the way, folks, WABC, more money coming up on many of these same stations. I'm Kudlow. We will see you next weekend.
Thank you.